This is March 27th, 1988, Albuquerque, New Mexico. Good morning, Bartholomew.
So then, my friends, good morning. Continuing with the question and answers that we began at our last coming together. Will there be a shift in the polar ice caps toward the end of the century? I haven't the faintest idea. You have to understand that anything that is predicted is based on a particular moment when it is seen. It has about it the moment that it's being looked at. And as if you looked in your own life, anything can happen at any time. What I do say about things like this, please, is the less attention you give to them, the less probability is there happening. Please understand, the world... All right, I've said to you again and again that you have a spherical psyche out of which your life rises and moves and changes and expands or contracts depending on what information you're placing in it, what kind of emphasis that you're giving to it. Well, if you could please stretch that concept to understand that as a totality, you have a world psyche. A global psyche, if you will. And the same laws apply to your global psyche as do to your individual one. Which means, to the extent to which you fill your psyche full of the exciting, amazingly wonderful, expansive beauty of trying to become your fullest, to resting into the knowing of your most vast being, then you contribute to the psyche of the globe as a whole. Nothing happens outside of your mind. This is not the earth that has decided that it's going to shift because it feels like moving. It isn't like that. There is a very strong and deep awareness of a play between the psyches of mankind, which is experienced as, in the global sense, as one. You see, the earth experiences you as one. It doesn't say, oh, there's Joe, and there's Harry, and there's Henrietta, and there's Margaret. No, it's not like that. The whole impact of the human strain of creation, added to all of the other magnificent strains that go in to make this wholeness of the globe, is experienced by the entity, if you want to talk about it that way, the wholeness of this planet in a certain way. It's experienced in a certain way. Now, the way that these decisions, if you want to talk about them, are made on a planetary basis has to do with what kinds of messages are coming to the wholeness of the planet from one of the energy fields being the human. And please understand, you are not the only energy field that has a say in what happens, as you well know, and I don't think you even want to. There are some very vast and wonderful sources that have a lot to do with this kind of moment-by-moment decision-making. Now, it is a long time when we're talking about power. There's a long time between now and the end of this century. If you will just look back 10 years, 20 years, if you want to really stretch yourself, 50 years, and think of where this planet was 50 years ago and the things that have happened to it, then you will understand that these kinds of predictions are made from a linear model, given the moment and what they see, what their own fears are, and what the fears of the group that they are in relationship. The one thing I ask about all of you, please, is to keep remembering the amazingly wonderful, dynamic, creative power that is absolutely at the fingertips of your being all the time. The difficulty in so many people's lives is that they feel bored. They're bored because they're stuck. And so things like this, I'm not saying that the person who asked this question is this kind of person, but it tends to go and become important to people who are looking for big events to make themselves feel excitement, wonder, something exciting to push against. But the more of your awareness that you can give to that basic, delightful expansion of the wonder of your being, if that stands as the primary function, then we don't need to be concerned with these things. I will tell you this. If it happens, you will cope. Is there harm derived from using the Ouija board? There are no rules. There are no rules. I will tell you the limitation. Now, you all, or many of you, are aware of some of the best material that has come through in the particular format that we're using today with certain variations has come through Jane Roberts, who began her work on the Ouija board. I also see in the energy fields here that some of you had your first direct contact with something other than your own mind on a Ouija board. So, there are no rules. The thing to remember, please, when you use something like a Ouija board is because it is located so close to the earth plane. I mean, it's right there, isn't it? I mean, it's made of some substance that comes of the earth. You have to use your own hands to put on it. There is then, of course, the dialogue between you and other and any kind of little formations that might be taking place there. The difficulty with the Ouija board is it's very difficult to access the very highest kind of material, and the greatest danger, and please understand this word, there are a lot of astral bums wandering around. And no blame. I mean, why not? You know, there are bums everywhere in the world, and they have their wonderful truth to bring. But when you want to ask about something about your own life or something that has a very deep meaning, please beware in using anything like this, because those other awarenesses can very much come close and influence the outcome on the board. So use your common sense at the same time. There are no rules. Would I use it as my only means of finding God? No. Can they be harmful? Yes, to the extent to which you allow them to just fill you with anybody who happens to be wandering around. So, take precautions. I'm being very practical. Take precautions. Ask who is there. Do you come in the name of the Christ or whatever? Make sure the answer is clear, and then go ahead. I don't recommend it for long-term awareness, but it is not to be denied that some very magically wonderful information has come through. No rules, please. Just use your own common sense. Someone asked me to explain why I dislike using the word channel for what is going on here. And the word channel to me always brings forward images of plumbing, you know. You channel. You know, you have this vessel, in this case, a body, and there's an opening at the top, and somehow something is poured into it, and then it plays through the system and hopefully goes out the other end or something gets rid of it. This is the plumbing procedure. And this negates the basic truth of what happens in what I would call inspirational awareness. You do not want to be plumbed. You want to be inspired. And there's a great difference. Look, they say that you cannot look on God and live. Now, what does this mean? It means simply, in one way of talking about it, that, you know, if you open up the top of your head and pour God in, you're probably going to fry your brain. You know, you are going to get a voltage that is so high that the system is going to go into some kind of imbalance. Now, what happens in most of these cases when there's not... The question arises constantly. What is the difference between a direct takeover where the so-called channel doesn't know what's happening? You know, there are those that do that and those that do other. The difference is that this is an inspirational event that is available to any one of you. What happens is simply that that energy field, which you call upon, and it can be any that you choose, at your call, at your heart call, it moves toward you, and it expands and inspires and brings wonder to your own consciousness. It does not go in and blast out whoever's there and say, it's my turn, you know, go away. And then when I'm done, you can come back. You see, just to use the thoughts in your own mind, a friend is one who comes in and sits in your presence and shares with you. And you feel their presence, and you give back to them, and they to you, and there's an opening back and forth of wonder. And that's what I ask you to think about. This event, if you put it in the plumbing field, is going to be very, very specialized. And it is not the way of it. You have the capacity to be inspired by the vastness in any moment of your life. So please, you know, When the saints talk about it, they talk about the quickening, the quickening. Well, what happens is, if you get around a very large energy field that's larger than your own, and it starts coming closer and closer to you, it begins to quicken your energy field. You begin to feel alive in a different kind of way. And that's precisely what happens here. And it's precisely what can happen to you. So, no separation, please. Because if we go back to the channeling, then we have to figure out how do you open the top and, you know, what kind of mechanism do you use to open it and how do you cram it down in. And all of these images which belie the truth. Those of you who have worked with the Comforter, and I see that there are several of you, in fact, more than several that have done so, it is not as if something enters you and displaces. You know, there's only so much in here, and you don't want to displace your being. You want to add to it. You want to become inspired. You want to become enlightened. It's precisely what calling in things like the Comforter can do, is to quicken your field of power and wonder so that the eyes open in a new way, so that the being responds to the world in a new way, so that the feeling tone within you is now alive in a way that it was not before. And that is how you experience God. A quickening of your being. So, practice. Just practice. Prayer is practicing. Remembering is practicing. Mantra is practicing. Walking with awareness, breathing with awareness, practicing, practicing, practicing. That's all. Is it important to know about past lives to know your present purpose? No. Now, let's be very clear about the whole past life situation. There are no rules. Some of you are very, very excited about and delighted by the coming into awareness of past lives. It brings you a delight in your life. It's real, it's tangible, it's useful, it's expansive. Now, if you are only in your past life great and wondrous people, if you have always been the queen and never the slave, if you are never some ordinary person just bumbling through life as best you can, if that be the case, then please look and see what else is there. But there's absolutely nothing wrong with the coming into awareness and alignment with past lives, should that be something that delights you. But if it is not something that delights you, I ask you to realize it's not necessary. Again, it depends on your own particular wonder, the way you feel best about approaching your wholeness. So please, no rules, but at the same time, the one thing to watch for, when you are going into a past life and really do so, realize what you are doing. You are going into a part of your wholeness that is relatively dormant because it's in a past situation. You find yourself back in it, and what you do literally on an energy level is you bring part of that back into this lifetime. You're talking about energy. What you do is you dip down into part of your psyche and say, that's what I want, and you come and you bring it back into your present life. Now, it's this dealing with it in your present situation that can be difficult if you're not aware of what you're doing. If you have done it well, those trace patterns will become alive in your present life. This is why some of you have done a good job of it by going back into your past, into lifetimes when you were strong and alive and dynamic and possessing a quality of being that you in this lifetime feel a lack for. Do you see how that works? Then you bring it in, you say, that's part of me too. If I did it then, I can do it now. Then you become greater in the sense of more aware of your vastness. Do you understand? So the motive, once again, plays an important part. If you go into past lives to feel puffed up and grandiose and I feel so miserable, I need to feel that I used to be great, that's not necessarily the best motive. But to go back into past and say, I feel within me that there must have been many lifetimes when I was able to do certain things with great power, and I need that knowing now because I've closed off that part for myself. That is absolutely legitimate work, but you do not have to go into a past life ritual to get and access that energy, which is what I would ask you to remember. You have the ability to sit quietly in your living room or your meditation room, wherever you might be, and feel within you, I want to feel the courage that I know must have been mine in other lifetimes, a certain physical courage. Let's say this lifetime you're physically, in your own words, inadequate in some way. Well, you know that that's not what you've done every lifetime of your life. You're not stupid. You're not going to program every lifetime with the same difficulty. Absolutely not. So you know within your conscious awareness, there are parts of my wholeness that remember that. And you can access, go in and say, please come forward, that wonderful sense of strength and power. And as we've talked about before, the way you do this is to creatively visualize yourself now in this life, having that kind of power and wonder and equilibrium in whatever area of your life is necessary. Now, where this becomes very useful, but it's very difficult to do, is if you have lost someone through death, say a loss of a child or a beloved or some. There are parts of the being that can flood in and hold you in the remembrance that you have done this before, that this is a pattern that lifetimes hold, and that there is that sweet knowing of knowledge that you can access in the moment of your agony that can come to you and give you the comfort that you need. So whatever the situation, whatever the loss, whatever the dilemma, there is a pattern of successful wonder in you that remembers. And all you need do, please, is to go in and ask. Come forward and let me feel how it feels to have that fulfillment in my life. I've been saying this for 10 years. We go way back on this one. So I bring it back again. You do not ever have to feel that you lack anything. Because whether you have it in this lifetime or not, you have it. Because if one human being has had it out there, including Jesus, including Buddha, including all of the great realized ones, you have it as well. It is the wholeness of the human condition. So, instead of looking around and feeling sorry and saying, I don't have, start accessing that part of yourself. And let us say that you are confined. Say that you are ill, confined to a wheelchair or something might be your destiny. And you know that you perhaps cannot rise up and go. You can begin to build around you a very strong energy field that begins to feel as if you were, that begins to enlighten you and enliven you in a new way by simply seeing and feeling yourself in another frame other than this one. Because this body is just one part of a very vast and wondrous whole. You don't have to feel lack unless you choose it. You have made the statement, do not be concerned with karma. There is no such thing. This is how your past karma comes and catches you out. Please expand on this. I have heard it said that there is no karma, but I do not understand. I have also heard that karma is a superstition that man uses to punish himself. What's the difference between karma and guilt, is the second question. The idea of karma, as understood by most of you, has to do with the idea of a little soul that enters the earth plane and grows and grows and grows and grows and bashes along a linear path to enlightenment. And given that model, karma makes sense. You do this, that happens, and so on, in some kind of a linear situation. I understand that. And if that is something that pleases you, you see, at certain times of your growth, it's absolutely essential that you at least entertain the fact that what you do today has a result in tomorrow. This is a very practical way of living, because indeed, when you look at it this way, it does have that kind of effect. When you look at your world, it seems that if you get angry at someone, they have a certain response pattern, so on. It goes down, 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 down. All right, now understand that, and that's a nice way to talk about moving through your world. So please, don't throw it out if it's useful. Where it is not useful is when it is used as a vice around your neck to keep you in remembrance of all of the things that you think that you have done that not only were against others, but against God on top of it. You know, and you don't even really know what God has in mind, but you're just quite sure that you did it wrong, that he's no doubt unhappy, and it's always a he, and there's someplace down there he's going to get you. And that is the linear expression of karma, and it is stifling to your creative choices. Because if you believe in that linear model, how are you going to have the courage to break out of all the existing belief structures that the world presents to you and start to live in a new way. And I've told you again and again that you've got to break out of your old constricting ideas and become awakened to something that's vaster and happier and looser and more delightful. How do you reconcile these? All right, I've asked you again and again to begin the process by going inside. Everything begins inside. By going inside your psyche, inside your being, and sit there with yourself and just feel the energy around you, not with any kind of thought in mind. To start, if you can, walking, to walk, to go out into the fields, into the mountains, to begin to push, to just move your body, to just begin to be alive in your body in some very easy way, or to just sit in your chair, if you cannot do this, to envision yourself alive and in motion, all's well, and to create a feeling around you of the wonderful integrity of you, of this moment, of you, of everything around you. And hold that remembrance of the perfect wonder of the excitement of this journey. And if you will do this time after time, and then if you want to contrast it with your feelings, having spent a limited amount of time with guilt, you know, within 2 minutes, you can have yourself so burdened with guilt that you will just not be able to move out of your structure. You see, you will be totally within it because it has a compelling magnetic force to it. I'm telling you that you can create an energy field around you, please hear this, that will repel guilt. That will repel guilt. And you say, yes, but without guilt, I'm going to cause harm. You see, that is what they tell you. That without this mechanism of guilt, that you are going to run amok. And I will tell you that this planet believes in guilt at a maximum rate. And they are already running amok. So there is... it's not working. It's just not working. In the beginning time, it wasn't necessary because the integrity of the moment so filled you. The knowing of the rightness of your own intuitive exciting response to the life moment was so close to you and so real that the integrity of the rightness rode with you as every choice was made, choice after choice after choice after choice. But when someone came in and said, wait a minute, you have a problem here. I will now tell you what your response is. Someone gets in between. This morning there was a comment, it's time to get rid of the middleman, or in this case, the middle woman, whichever happens to be your particular delight. But you've got to get away from that moment of saying that there is another persona, there is another person that is somehow going to translate my moment for me. And that takes you one moment removed. Now, all guilt is in the mind. All guilt is in the mind. The body does not understand guilt. What the body understands is you saying to the body, there has been some trouble here, please close down. That's what you say. The body says, yes, dear. Yes, dear. I've got it. Close down. It doesn't go and say, are you sure, dear? Shall we think about this? What's happened? You see, the body responds. It just says, you know, I say again and again, the integrity of this magnificent body is that it wants in all of its fullness to do what you want it to do so that you can be at ease in what it knows to be a very difficult environment. Have you noticed? This is a difficult physical environment. And the body knows that. And its first and only delight and directive is, how can I help? How can I help? Oh, I see. Now, sometimes you say to the body, I want you to start creating some pain around certain events because I don't want to do them. All right. Obviously, many of you, this happens in, let's just take one example. This can happen in, adolescence as you're growing up and the sexual issue comes up. I will tell you that a lot of you with back problems look there because the message is hold it down, slow it down, make it so painful, stay out, get away. So that whole area then, the cellular structure just simply says to it, close down. Slow it down. Let's not just move with power and energy and motion. Let's not. Let's close it down. Let's be afraid. You understand? The body says, all right. It seems to the body that this is safer for you. You didn't say, let's do what's most exciting, what's the most dynamic, what's the most creative. You said, what's safest? And out of all the things that the body has recorded, all the things that the cells have heard, it's the most magnificent computer. Dr. Aiken, your computer is nowhere near as magnificent as you are. And I love you so much. Out of this moment of this computer saying deeply, deeply within, how do I keep safe? Not how do I become alive and expansive and ecstatic. You see? Now, that's the past. If you are ready for the unheard of probability of happiness, let's even take it to a higher octave. How about ecstasy? How about higher than that? How about bliss? How about wandering around, feeling alive within and without and around and about you? Then you are ready to start giving the directives back to the cellular structure, which is, guilt is not working. Guilt is not working. But love will. But acceptance will. Beauty will. Laughter will. Tell your body. Tell your body. No more need for guilt. No. It takes a while, but it'll get it. It wants more than anything. More than anything to help you be who you want to be. And if you have wanted to be safe, controlled, and in just enough pain so that you won't be alive, then it will do that for you. But you have the wherewithal, the amazing power in each moment of your life to say, it's a new moment. There's a new message. And then please, as best you can, start moving as if. When you walk, walk as if you were in ecstasy, you were in bliss, you were absolutely alive with it. Practice. Practice bliss. Why not? You've got to do something. It has everything to do with everything. And the cells which have had this message of the dirge of fear, that if you do allow it to begin to feel life flooding through you, that somehow all this is going to go awry. I want to tell you something, my friends. You are so much more reliable than you know. Do you think on a magnificent day like this, beautiful day, you would cram yourself in a room like this? Do you really think that your being is the kind of being that would allow you to harm consciously? It is not true. It is not true. You can talk about the lessons that one learns as one moves through lifetimes. And the one thing that most of you in this room know is harmlessness makes you feel better. It's not because it's right. It just feels better. Being harmless feels better. And so you choose the willingness to do it. It is not because God said you had to. It is because, you see, most of you have come far past that point. It's because your being says, I sing in a different tone of awareness when I'm totally harmless. And you record with consciousness when you are harmful. The being remembers and says, that doesn't feel as good. The computer has recorded all of the data. All you have to do is ask it. Just ask. To begin this day, to start to walk in a feeling of joy and bliss and ecstasy. Oh, very heady words. I can see some of you saying, oh dear, I don't know. I don't know. What would I say, for example? What would I talk about? You know, what would I think about? But I ask you sincerely this day to begin that feeling. Guilt is in the mind. The body does not know what guilt is. It only knows what you have said safety is. And that's a different word. Beloved Bart, tell us about these channels, plumbers, crystals, and mumbo jumbo, and when people are going to start, whoops, I have to have added vision. Tell me about these channels, crystals, and mumbo jumbo, and when people are going to start living their truth instead of standing outside their lives and forever processing. When does the wholeness and inspiration come? Well, perhaps that's been answered to some extent. It comes when you call it. It comes when you dare to call it. When you dare to call it. Is there anything wrong with crystals? Of course not. For some people, they're magnificently wonderful additions. And to the extent to which you have belief is the extent to which they help you. Anything that helps you is absolutely God's gift to you. This particular person sounds like he or she, I suspicion a man, perhaps not, is getting ready to stop being a seeker and is ready to become a finder. Because that kind of energy that you feel in the question says, how long am I going to keep myself waiting? But you see, it's you that are keeping yourself waiting. So, how to become the finder? We've talked about this before in certain places in our work. You become the finder by beginning to bring into your mind what finding would feel like, look like, talk like, dream like. And the more that you do it, the more that you turn to that frequency of finding and watching your life to see where you have been the seeker and deciding to change it into the finder, and being responsible for the one ongoing delight of feeling the energy of the finder, then you will have it. Now look, my friends, many of you have followed traditional paths, some in this lifetime and in other lifetimes, obviously. For example, let us say that you have felt that the model of surrender to Jesus has brought you a knowing of God. Now, there is a point here where surrender to Christ has with it a rather delightful feeling, but at the same time, there comes the fear along with it, because you know you haven't, no matter how much you fooled yourself, if you read the rules and regulations around it, you are not fulfilling the rules and regulations. You know, it's very hard to follow all of the rules around all of these religions. What I'm asking you to do is to understand that in the moment that you began to experience the energy of Christ, if that happens to be your path, the moment that you've been experiencing that is not because you have been following the rules, it's because you have been calling on the energy of the one true epitome of finding that you have, who is Jesus. Do you understand what I'm saying? It is not because you follow the rules. It is because you turn the dial to where the finder was. And when you turn your dial to the finder, that energy pours forth into your life. If you equate it with having to follow the rules, then there is fear involved. Because when you cannot follow the rules, then there comes the idea that the finder has moved away from you. And if you believe this, you see, the finder moves away from you. When you say, oh, I know, it's leaving me, it's leaving me, it's leaving me. All right, what happens? The body's listening. The wholeness says, oh, it's leaving, it's leaving. Fine, it's leaving. So it begins to go. I tell you, what you ask for, you get. And if you sit there saying, oh, I know it's leaving me because I did that terrible thing last night. Oh, how I wish. The next day, you will feel loss. The finder is no longer present because you have said, I don't want the finder this morning. I want to be what I would describe as the worm. And you know, you do your lives that way a lot, my friends. If I might just make this small remark. You do, you know, your lives go from being that exciting moment of the finder, meaning I'm full of the explosion of the moment and I'm so alive with this, and then the next morning, oh dear. Or the next moment, oh dear. Feeling your wholeness, daring to feel your beauty, your wonder, your power. Oftentimes the next moment, in order to balance out what you think to be arrogance, we have the worm. It's entirely up to you. You know, the worm is God as well. There's no separation. It's just more fun to be the finder than to be the worm, you see. I'm just on your side, that's all. In the Buddhist way of looking at life, they speak of the doctrine of anattam, no solid center of human personality. No solid center of human personality. Yet, these same Buddhists acknowledge life after life for some personal center. They speak of recognizing the incarnation of one's self. Can you bring some light to these apparent contradictions? I like the word apparent because they are only in appearance contradictions. If you will look at what we have shared, lo, these 10 years, those of you whose ears are still functioning after all this wind, all these 10 years, you will hear the same thing. You will hear the very same thing, because when we speak of one level of life, of one level of being, we talk in terms of that which is becoming. We've talked about it before. That which is becoming, which means that you go through some kind of isolated identification with a certain part of your being, and you identify and you go on and on and on. Well, you know, if you can get yourself far enough, all right, a good way to think about this is you have in your literature some work that has been done about people's experiences who have been so-called clinically dead, left their bodies, and returned. You're all familiar with this kind of material. Now, if you read the material carefully, for the ones who got quite a distance out from the physical, not only their physical body, but the earth field itself, you will find what they say is everything happens at once. How is it that my entire life could be reviewed with patience, and I see it all, and I feel that it is in 1 or 2 seconds? How can that be so? Both are true. Both are true. Your mind is going to crack over this one. So don't really think too much about it, because the more you dwell on it, the more your mind will begin to crack, because what you're asking is to have a perception coming out of your physical body which says, I'm here, and you can't tell me I'm not here. Here I am, I'm here. And everything around you says, you're here, yes, I see, you're here. So all of that validity, once you leave this physical body and no longer have this particular perception, what are you going to see? You are going to see one source. You're going to see one alive, dynamic whole where everything happens at once, where everything is combustibly alive and in motion and absolutely magnificently safe. And at the same time, there will be trace remembrance of a separated life. You are both. And you have the capacity, isn't it magnificent? I tell you, the journey that you have picked as a human is exciting. This is where you have both. It's not available in all brands of life, you know, but it is here. You have the capacity to experience yourself as that personal self, and at the same time, to experience yourself as no self at all. Just wonderfully abundant, alive energy and power with the same deep being. The sense of being never leaves you. Becoming does. Can I put it that way? Can you understand? I hope I'm reaching. Becoming is the delight of the human, of becoming and becoming and becoming. It's wonderful. But at the same time, the delight is of the stillness of the being. You are what you are, what you are. And you have never moved from that point. So, all of the paradoxes. You have the stillness, no motion, and you have the explosion of your universe. It's delightful, exciting. You've picked a magnificent way to have it all. Why not? Don't let your mind trap you. Who's ever questioned, don't let it trap you. Just allow the knowing that right now, this is what is, and do it fully, with all your awareness. When that's done, when the body is no longer here, something totally magnificently alive will be there. Question. What is the eternal effect of love from one soul to another in one lifetime or many lifetimes? It is my understanding that in this material that you have come to call the Course in Miracles, that there is a belief that the thing that goes on and on and on is love. And it's absolutely true. What I would like for you to feel within your being is this. If you postulate that you are on a journey, and your journey is to go around the globe, and let's proceed that you do so, when you come home and talk to your loved ones about it, you are not going to bring back the color of every pebble that you stepped upon, the view of every leaf on every tree, the feeling of every moment on your journey. What you are going to come and give to them as their gift is those things that so moved you, that you yearn to share them. Now, some of those can be difficult, some of those can be magic, but here I am, and this is my gift, and these I share. When you end your life here in the physical body, there will be, I don't like to call them spirits because that sounds something very strange, but there will be magnificently alive life patterns of energy hanging around there to welcome you. And what they are very likely to say is, what out of your life do you want to show me? They don't sit you down and say, what did you do? Why did you do it? It says, what of your life would you like to show me? And that's the gift of the journeyer who comes home to the beloveds. And they don't say, they would never ask you 18,000 questions. If they were wise, they would sit and they would say, what do you have to show me? What do you have to give me? And this is what happens when you end this life. And out of all of the things that you have done, those things will come out of you to give that you have most loved. Because in that moment, you will have such understanding of the difficulties of this journey. Almost as if you had to walk blind through so many of the moments of it. But as you sit there with this beloved other, your gift will be of those moments when you did love, when you did your best. And so remember, please, there is no judgment committee. You know, there is no boardroom of directors of karma who sit you down and say, account for your life, twerp. There will probably only be one. Because to tell you the truth, one great being of light is about all a newly freed soul can handle. And it will ask you, tell me about your journey. And from the very beginning until the very end, the jewels, the gifts, are when you loved. Not love perfectly, just love the best that you could. I beg you to understand this deeply in your being. You're not being judged. You're being guided. You're being urged to love yourself and this experience. But there is no other question. So, beloved, when you die, but share with me. And in the sharing of your moments of your love, here will come the feeling of the beauty and the worthwhileness of the journey and all of the obstacles and the things that did not go right and all of the things that you wish had been different fade, and the light stands and it says thank you, because in that moment what you will understand is that you have added to the love of the whole by what you have done. And every time someone dies and is asked and shares, and no one comes up empty-handed, no one, then the wholeness is more full of love. There's more of it in a way that you will understand once again when you choose to leave this body. No love ever dies. You carry it with you in your being and give it as a gift. And so is it received in gratitude. Thank you.